Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fuel Your Fandom podcast. My name is Saint.
And me? Well, I'm Jim.
Well, hey, Jim, how goes it?
Do I have to answer that?
I mean, you could lie.
Well, I'm not going to lie because I absolutely owe our audience absolute honesty. And because I just, the older I get, the less mental bandwidth I have to keep a whole shitload of stories straight. It's been a rough week, bro, and I know that you sympathize because off air we were sort of talking about how, you know, usually we start off these little episodes with a little bit of a recap of what we've been up to. And yep. You and I have both just had a rough week. We've gotten to a place,
I'm
not
going to
tell your story,
yeah.
But we've gotten to a place where we're okay. But, the week up until now, it's only Wednesday as we record this, but just the last, like, sort of, like, 7 days of each of our respective existences has not been stellar.
Not been great, no.
You know? No, not really. But as of right now, today, as we record this, things are better, and we're able to sort of, like, move forward on that.
They're trending upwards now. Trending upwards.
They're trending upwards.
So. Well, what's been going on in your neck of the woods? I notice you're not in your familiar environment. For those of you who can't see, Jim is not in his usual spot.
Tell me, where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
That is true, I am not.
Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, where be you now?
Where I am now is I'm in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Which is a place that I have frequently had reason to go for, you know, the last year and a half or so, because this is where my lady lives, at least for a little while longer. That's kind of like been the sort of logistical nightmare that's been occupying the last 7-8 days or so, is just trying to figure out how to get she and all of her stuff back to where I am. So that's the plan for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen this weekend. But just getting to this place has been kind of arduous and, you know, not exactly the smoothest process. But it's we're in a good place now. Everything is in a good place now. So the ability to kind of get our legs under us and move forward is where it needs to be. But it took some doing to get here. So that's where we are, and more about that I will not say. And you are in your usual place in beautiful, picturesque Olympia, Washington, the capital of the beautiful Pacific Northwestern state. But your week has been less than stellar as well.
Yeah, it's been 5 days now as we speak. So last Friday, we were set to record this podcast. Mm-hmm. We had set it nice and early. Because, you know, I had stuff to do and you had stuff to do and we wanted to make sure we just knocked it out of the park early so I could get to editing and catch up. We never seem to be able to consistently get a podcast done early and catch up. I mean, we used to do a bunch and, like, record them and then edit them and then have a few in the can and be a couple weeks out. But the more we did that, the more I realized that that kind of sucks, because we try to be topical with a lot of the conversations that we do talk about.
Very much so.
So you're topical about something 3 weeks in advance. Now all of a sudden you're 3 weeks out on a news cycle and it's not topical anymore. And so I kind of fell away from doing that, which of course puts us behind the eight ball every week, because it's like, now we got to record and then edit, and then record, and edit, and it's a vicious cycle sometimes. But
and it's not like you and I are busy or anything. I mean, I'm working 3, maybe sometimes 4 jobs, and you've got a regular schedule with your job now, but you've also got family stuff. We've both got bands. Just trying to make sure that we find the time to get these things knocked out. It's getting to be difficult trying to find a consistent time during which you're both available. So it's kind of been ad hoc and catch-as-catch-can when it comes to actually being able to sit down and do these things. But because we love it, and because it is something that, we both derive a great deal of satisfaction from, it is a priority. It's just sometimes logistically difficult.
Correct. And then on top of that, you got to add scheduling guests and things like that. So if a guest has a particular...
And you have to add editing, which, again, I'm going to give you a shout out for that, because once again, you're doing the heavy lifting on the back end of this thing. So once we finish recording, that's the easy part. That's the fun conversation part, where we get to talk about current events and geek shit. And then you have to go in and do some nuts and bolts stuff on the back end to make sure that it actually sounds good for when anybody listens to it.
It's only difficult because I get tired of hearing my own voice after a while. So I sit there and what I do is I'll do a, what I call a clean pass. I'll do the raw edit, the rough edit, which is basically I go through and I take out all the sniffles and farts and sneezes as much as I can. All the background noise.
Which I, again, apologize for. Those are mostly me.
Not always you. But I take out as much as I can and I clean it up if there's like big spaces and places. On a sound wave, you can see that and just kind of trim it. And so I do that and that's my initial pass. But while I'm doing that initial pass, I'll make... and I blame former guest of the podcast and friend of the show, Mark Rahner, for this. Because the podcast used to just be talking heads. There never used to be sound clips or audio bits or, you know, punctuated jokes with media. You know, it always just used to be the jokes that were in the podcast and that's it. And he's the one that hit me to the fact that, hey, you can be adding sound effects. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to, you know, trigger anyone's copyright warnings or anything. It's like, as long as you're under like 15 seconds, usually they don't give a shit. So it's like, oh, well,
yeah,
that changed the game. And so I take, during that first pass of the podcast editing, I'll take a notepad and write down timestamps of all the different places that I want to put a joke. I'll put kind of what I'm thinking of for a joke. It's like, oh, well, a Family Guy reference would go good here, or a South Park joke will go good here, or a Simpsons joke. I've been using a lot of Simpsons because, I mean, they fit everywhere.
And those Family Guy jokes, that's very meta anyway, because it's not like Family Guy ever has any cutaway gags that have nothing else to do with what's going on.
Right.
Chicken gave me a bad coupon.
And so I'll have a list of like 20, 25, 30 sound clips, which I then have to source after the fact. And then I source them all, I edit them down. Which is a sizable chunk of time. And then I got to go back into each of the time codes and insert the sound clips in the rough edit, which is fun because depending upon the size of the sound clip, it bumps the time code up. But so let's say I had a 30-second sound clip. That sound clip is going to then bump the rest of the timeline up. And so I have to go in and do a whole bunch of mental gymnastics and mathematics to kind of figure out where the next joke's going to be. Okay, well, we're going to start 30 seconds up now, and then, you know, it progressively gets weirder as I go.
But you know what? You do all that. He does that for you. If you're hearing this right now, he does this for you. So throw my boy some appreciation. Let's have a round of applause right here.
Yay!
See, you make a joke, but now I got to edit that in there. You see? I got to put that in there.
I make a passing reference, and now all of a sudden you have more work to do, so... Yeah, I'm going to shut the fuck up.
But, yeah, so we had a plan on Friday to get caught up and get started and get done early. Because this week, as we sit here, is Wednesday. This week's become very, very busy. I've got a gig on Saturday, a medical appointment on Friday. And then I'm going to go see the Kevin
Smith. I'm driving 800 miles this weekend, too. So, yeah, you're seeing Kevin Smith.
I'm seeing Clerks 3 with Kevin Smith's convenience tour on Sunday. I'm pretty excited about that. But our efforts to get caught up were in vain. We woke up on Friday morning, and my wife... Friday, I usually try to stay in bed as long as I can. I have to get up by...
It's your day off.
I have to get up by 8 o'clock to... I walk my daughter to the crosswalk. Since we live across the street from the school, literally, all I have to do is walk her to the crosswalk. And so that's kind of my time with her in the mornings, and... So I walk her to the crosswalk and send her on her way to her school. And so I usually try to stay in bed till about 8. She doesn't have to leave till 9, so that gives me about an hour to become functional. And so I'm laying in bed. My wife has gotten up, and she sends me a really panicked message saying something's wrong with the dog. Mm-hmm. And so I jump out of bed, and I run into the kitchen, and... My dog, Roxy, is laying on the kitchen floor, just not moving. And she's breathing really, really shallow, really, really fast breaths. And you could tell something wasn't right. She wasn't responding to food. She wasn't responding to her name. She wasn't responding to anything. And so, I mean, I sat there with her for a few minutes, and I put my head on her and was trying to comfort her and... this, that, and the other thing, and we kind of realized, my wife and I, that we had to take her to the vet. So my wife calls in, and we get the kids off to school, and I get dressed, and we take the dog to the emergency vet, where they proceed to tell us that she's very sick. In addition to kidney issues and liver issues that are pretty far advanced that we had no idea about, she's also got arthritis along the entirety of her spine, and which I guess has put her in an enormous amount of pain recently, which we literally had no idea.
Well, that's the thing about animals. You know, the instinct of animals is to kind of conceal any injuries, illnesses, or weaknesses because they don't want to be the weak link in the herd. They'll get taken out by predators. So oftentimes animals they communicate as well as they can, but it is an evolutionary and biological thing to sort of, you know, to hide what's wrong with them. So it kind of does seem like sometimes things go wrong all at once, but a lot of the time it's just, you know, our pets trying to keep those things from us just based on biological reasoning that they don't necessarily understand, but that's kind of built into their DNA.
And so the vet had kind of given us a couple options. I mean, the first option was basically we could just throw money at the problem, see what we can fix, but it's kind of a cascade effect at that point. We could fix one thing and then the other thing is going to take her out. We could fix two things and then a third thing is going to, you know, I mean, and it just became progressively, it became more a conversation about quality of life. And that's what we asked him. We said, what is her quality of life going to be like going forward from here? He's like, well, we can't really guarantee any kind of beneficial quality of life adjustment with the current course of medications we can do. Something's going to always be, you know, hurting her. And so the humane option would be to put her to sleep. And after a lot of crying and soul searching and everything else, we decided that for our baby that we had to let her go. And so that was really difficult. And so we had to we wanted to make sure that the kids were there, or at least had the option to be there. And so we went and got the kids from school and sat them both down and explained what was happening. And it hit them pretty hard too. I mean, it's sudden. We had no idea any of this was happening. Went from one day being here to the next day, you know, not. And of course, this dog Roxy was Maria's best friend for the last 7 years. We got her as a rescue. And the dumb thing is I was never supposed to like this dog. That's not true. I say it as a joke. The joke with this dog was the fact that my wife really wanted a dog when we moved into this house because we had a yard, we had a big enough house for a smaller dog, and she had decided she wanted a dog. And I said, "Well, we had this conversation. We weren't sure if we had the size in the room and all that." And she's like, "But I want a dog," and I'm like, "Well, I thought we had this talk." And she's like, "You don't understand. If you, because I've been looking at, I was driving a Charger at the time, a Dodge Charger, four door." And I had wanted the Challenger, the two-door Challenger, sportier car. But she talked me into the Charger because it has four doors over two, and you got a family, and this, that, and the other thing. And she looks at me dead in the eye and goes, "I'll let you get the Challenger if you let me have this dog." And I'm like, "Woman, don't play with me. Don't play with me. I'll be out shopping tomorrow." She said, "I don't give a shit." And I'm like, "All right, this is a bad deal for you." But so I got the dog, or she got the dog, and I got the Challenger, and you know, and so the joke was always that this wasn't my dog, you know, but she really was.
Well, the internet is littered with stories of dads falling in love with the pets they didn't want.
Well, that, I mean, and that's just it, and it was really, really difficult because, you know, this dog is one of the weirdest dogs I've ever had. She's a coward. She was a chicken wuss. We called her Chicken Wuss because the mere hiccup or a burp or an untoward fart that she wasn't expecting, and she took off running. She would hide. And we think that was because of some trauma. She was a rescue, so we think she had some trauma in her first couple of years. And
Yeah, I had a dog that for about 8 years, who was 4 or 5 years old when I got him, and we don't know at the time. We still didn't know, and I still don't know what had happened to him in puppyhood, because he was the sweetest dog, but you couldn't get anywhere near him while he was eating. If you were in the same room, he would stop eating and look at you over his shoulder to make sure that you weren't going to try and take his food. And if you got anywhere near him, he was not an aggressive dog, but he'd start a low rumbling growl in the back of his throat. And if you tried to touch him while he was eating, he'd bare his teeth. Yeah. Only time he ever showed any signs of aggression or anger or displeasure at all was if you tried to mess with him while he was eating. And so whoever had him before us must have done something to make him sketchy and anxious around food. So we just left him be. We poured the food in the bowl and walked the fuck away. He didn't ask us for much. He just asked to be left alone while he was eating. So, you know, dogs are like humans. Whatever habits or whatever conditioning, Pavlovian, that they get when they're puppies, that just sticks with them, regardless of whatever happens to them going forward from there.
Yeah, so we called her our chicken Liz, and I got beeped from a cell phone or whatever. She used to like to jump up in my... I sit in a recliner to watch TV, and she used to like to jump up in my lap, and she's part lab, part retriever, so she's not really small. She's rather big, but she liked to jump up and sit in your lap, and every time I'd go to pet her, she would collapse into a pile on the floor because she wanted her belly scratched. So she and my feet notoriously are the worst part of my body. They hurt pretty much all the time. And she would always like to come up and just collapse right on my feet. And it's like, oh, damn it, dog. Why my feet? Every time. And, you know, it's stupid, but I'd give almost anything to have her collapse on my feet again.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah, it's dumb the things you miss, you know, but these are the moments that make our lives with, you know, loved ones, whether they're pets or family or whoever, that's what you remember. It's like that Goodwill Hunting thing, you know, when Robin Williams talked about his wife farting in bed. That's the stuff you remember, you know?
Yeah. And so we wanted to make sure that the kids were all there and we all got to say goodbye. And so that was really difficult. But I felt it was important. And so, we all say goodbye, and he administered the drugs, and I had my hand on her when she stopped breathing, and it was a lot. It was really heavy for a few days.
Well, I mean, if it helps, and I don't know if it does, I know we talked about this, offline, or online, but off the air a little bit earlier, is that you're a more courageous person than I am. The dog who growled a little bit about the food, Gordon, he was a great dog. And we lost him about 10 years ago, my ex-wife and I. And I couldn't be in the room. I couldn't be in the room. And it was tough because I've since read, you know, when you have to say goodbye to a companion, you want to be there because they look for you when you're not. And they want to know in their final moments they were loved. And you had the spine to do that. I didn't. And I've always regretted it, so... I know it doesn't really bring a lot of comfort now, but it will.
I was afraid that if we didn't do that, that the kids would be resentful at one point or another. Especially Maria. But she's not hurting anymore, and so there's that.
You did the right thing, and I know you know that, but it helps to hear, I think.
It just sucks. Like I said, what I wouldn't give to to have that coward dog fall on my feet again one more time, you know?
Yeah.
No, we're not here to just talk depressing shit. Yeah, we've had shit weeks, but you know what? This podcast is supposed to be a catharsis and kind of a way to just revel in things that make us happy. So we're not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on the good things as resolves around my beautiful chicken wuss dog, and you will always be loved, Roxy. You know that. So. Yep. And I think she knew that towards the end. So, anyhow, not what we're here to talk about today. There's a few things in the news. We were going to do a longer episode about the D23 conference that just happened with Disney. I think that's by the time we get to it, it would be untimely, as we talked about with trying to stay topical. But there were a couple of interesting news items that crashed because of that. First and foremost being the announcement trailer for The Little Mermaid. The live-action Little Mermaid with Halle Bailey as the chief lead character.
What a fucking minefield that's been online for the last week.
Well, it's fine to get to see where the mouth breathers live.
Mouth breather.
yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I think maybe it was somewhere around the time when one of those KKK dudes chucked a chair at Geraldo Rivera's face. But I heard Henry Rollins, who I adore beyond description. He's the modern Renaissance man between the music and the books and the spoken word stuff and all the stuff he does. He said, you know what? People always say to racists, shut the fuck up. And he said, no, I say let them talk. Not because they have anything new or worthwhile to say, but we want to know where they are. We want them to show their ass so that we know who they are and what they're up to. It's when they get quiet that you should worry, because they have the mentality of fucking asshole toddlers. When your toddler goes quiet, that's when you gotta worry. When the racists go quiet, you know they're up to something. Let them fucking talk. Let them run their mouths and expend the energy they have that way. Because that's still destructive, but at least we know, if they're making noise, we can spot them.
And of course, now we have QAnon and social media and all this shit to keep us fully aware of what the racists and dumb shits are saying, but they kind of erupted.
Fortunately and unfortunately.
Over this whole, you can't have a black mermaid, or Ariel can't be black, blah, blah, blah. It's like, bro, it's a fictional character. She could be whatever the hell you want. You know? It doesn't matter.
And of course,
it's an established character already. Who gives a shit?
And these are all the same people that didn't bitch when they made Jesus white, so you kind of know where their priorities lie. Right. But, you know, what's really sad about that also is that there are other sort of tertiary entertainment properties that kind of got sucked into the black hole vortex of gravitational well along with that. Like, all of a sudden people were like, hey, why do we have black hobbits on the new Rings of Power series on Amazon? Well, let's go back to the source material on that. Tolkien actually described the Harfoots as being darker of skin.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a precedent set for that, too. So, you know, when you're talking about fictional characters...
They're talking about fictional characters. Fictional characters.
You're just... When you kick and scream and bitch that they actually try to bring some diversity into it, oh, everything's gotta be woke now. No, but everybody, we've talked about representation before in toxic fandom to a kind of absurd degree, because it just keeps, like a bad penny, coming up and coming up and coming up. So we have to kind of continually address these things, because it just won't fucking go away. But all of this stuff about, you know, how it's woke and how everything, you know, and then yesterday, the new trailer for the new Hulu version of Hellraiser dropped. And
I
this
saw
time,
that.
Pinhead... Yeah, it looks... I mean, I'm not even into horror as a general rule, but I'll probably check this out because it looks like it's very well done. But they dared to make Pinhead a woman, so I'm thinking, well, all the racists and all the misogynists and all the people that are bitching about how you can't make fictional characters any different than they've ever been, regardless of what the creators want, even though the fans don't own the property, I'm sure that they're taking another nice, big, double lung, deep breath to start bitching about the fact that, Pinhead's a woman now.
Not just a woman, a trans woman. So let's,
for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I believe Jamie Clayton is the actress, and trans woman. Yeah, so it's about to get real stupid, but I saw, again, I'm not really a huge horror film fan, but this looks badass. And I'm definitely going to sit down with it when it comes out on Hulu, so.
Yeah, I probably will too, and I love Goran Visnjak. You know, everybody that's in it looks really great, so... As much as I'm not a fan of horror, and I was just talking about this with my lady the other day about how I kind of felt, when I was a kid, I was a little more into horror because, you know, same reason I was into hip-hop music. It was danger at a safe distance, and I lived in a very small town. I lived in Mayberry. I had an idyllic childhood, and, you know, you got to get your kicks somewhere. I had posters of Freddy Krueger on my walls before I had posters of Freddie Mercury on my walls. So I was super into it then, but then there was a sea change in horror. It kind of went from being like fantasy horror. Like, everybody knows that Jason Voorhees ain't going to climb up from the bottom of the lake, you know, Crystal Lake to murder teenagers. Everybody knows that, you know, you can't... Yeah, sure, if you die in your dream, you die in real life. That's an old wives' tale and a folklore sort of urban legend thing. But, you know, there's no dream killer that's going to, you know, transmit his power. So these are fantasy things. But I kind of lost my taste for horror when the gore porn thing started happening. I watched Hostel when that came out.
Oh, yeah,
Hostel. Yeah, and I just was like, oh, God, it was so brutal. And because of the plausibility of that, because it was no longer rooted in fantasy and it was no longer supernatural, these are real-life, plausible horror things that could, in theory, actually happen. That was the tipping point for me where I went, yeah, I'm kind of washing my hands of this. And I didn't watch another horror movie until A Quiet Place came out. And that was even arguably more of a thriller. There was definitely, it was a monster movie, but
yeah.
I just really liked John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. So I did check that out, but I might actually jump back in for this Hellraiser thing just in order to give it some numbers, to give it some support. Clive Barker is obviously not involved, but I mean, nonetheless, hopefully they're going to take the property and do some interesting, fresh, and cool shit with it. So I think I might be on board.
I gotta say, I mean, I've not been a big fan of the horror genre as it sits, but I just finally finished watching Stranger Things. Will, my son Will, wanted me to watch it, and they've been bugging me to watch it, so I finally sat down. I'm like, all right, I got this time at work, I'll sit down and watch it. The only criticism I have of it, it's actually really well made. I really kind of enjoyed it. A lot of really nerdy D&D references and shit like that.
And it's a big-time homage to D&D and Stephen King and all that classic 80s horror that I just talked about.
Yep. The only thing is that I was watching it primarily on my phone. And there's a lot of really, really dark scenes. And not like dark as in, ooh, spooky, but dark as in, like, lighting. And so it was really, really hard to see some of the scenes. But, I mean, other than that, I thought it was extraordinarily well made. I think the Duffer Brothers have done a really good job with what they've done, and I'm actually looking forward to season 5 when it finally rolls around. And
this was the penultimate season, so season 5 will be the last. That's the wrap up. We're gonna finish the story of Hawkins.
They say they got a spinoff in the works too. I haven't read much about that, but
that's news to me.
I enjoyed it, and of course, there's a lot of really horror elements to Stranger Things as well. Primarily, I mean, even. There was a lot of homage in the season 4 villain Vecna. I mean, look at him. He's like almost like a carbon copy of Freddy Krueger. And it was a very similar type of motivation. You'll kill you in your dreams kind of
thing. It's the upside down versus the dream world, but he's still a very charismatic, disfigured killer with a very clearly defined set of abilities. And he goes after kids. So yeah, there's definite parallels to be drawn there.
Right. So as far as that goes, now we were talking about... So the things that they announced at D23, and we're going to go in no particular order, just as this article kind of throws them at me. The trailer for Hocus Pocus 2 was released. I watched that. I was curious about that. Not a huge Hocus Pocus fan. Never really been my thing. It's okay. I like Doug Jones, who plays Captain Saru and on Star Trek Discovery, so it's nice to see him back in action.
Doug has been, he's done so many makeup roles.
He's your go-to creature guy when you need someone lanky and creepy and...
From Hellboy to Pan's Labyrinth, I mean, that guy's pretty much done it all because you can put a costume on him, and because he's kind of an Anthony Daniels character, like C-3PO, where you put a costume on him, because he is so slim inside the costume, it doesn't look like a costume. It doesn't look like there's an actual person there because when you, even after you finish putting the costume on, they're still human-sized.
Yep. But he's one of my favorite characters on Star Trek Discovery.
He's great.
Saru, and he's fantastic. So they announced a couple of more Disney movies. An Enchanted, not remake, but a sequel called Disenchanted. They announced Peter Pan and Wendy. Haunted Mansion. They're still doing a Haunted Mansion movie.
That's been in the works for a while.
Yeah. And... they announced a prequel to the Lion King live-action movie, live-action being in quote marks considering it's all CG, but...
Right.
A live-action prequel called Mufasa.
I just hear that name and I shudder.
Mufasa.
Ooh. Do it again. Mufasa. 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 Ooh, it tingles me.
Which is set to tell the tale of Mufasa... I guess as he becomes one of the greats of the Pride Land. So, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work, but they announced a Snow White movie live action. And, of course, we talked about Halle Bailey as the Little Mermaid. They announced a sequel to, Inside Out, the Pixar movie. They announced another Pixar movie called Elemental. which looks pretty interesting. Like I said, I'm just kind of glossing over a bunch of these really quickly because we've got more stuff to talk about. We can easily do a full episode about this stuff here, but
and we plan to, but you know, life got in the way.
Now heading over to Marvel. So as far as Marvel goes, they announced the villain for the Captain America New World Order is going to be the Leader. And the Leader, of course, was teased with Blake Nelson in The Incredible Hulk all the way back when he looked a little bit more like Ed Norton and a little less like Mark Ruffalo. But
which, again, we have to acknowledge the fact that that was touched on in She-Hulk. It was kind of winked at a little bit, and not the most recent episode, but the one before that, when Mark Ruffalo said something about, well, that was a different person then. Literally, kind of, you know, taking the breaking the fourth wall thing away from Tatiana Maslany on that one, but...
That fight was so many years ago, I'm a completely different person now. Literally.
Yep.
But, yeah.
We also had an announcement. This one's pretty excited for the Thunderbolts. We knew the Thunderbolts movie was coming along. They had announced a director a little while ago, who I forget who's directing it now, but I don't have that information in front of me. But they announced the core membership of the Thunderbolts team, which
I thought was really interesting.
Right, because they brought in Yelena Belova as Black Widow, or Black Widow 2, mm-hmm. if you want to go that route. But in addition, they brought in Red Guardian, played by David Harbour. Mm-hmm. They brought in Ghost from the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie.
And Wasp, yeah.
They brought back Val, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Is it Julia Louis-Dreyfus? Mm-hmm. It was Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes.
Okay. They brought back Sebastian Stan, who I imagine is going to take a leadership role in this as the Winter Soldier. We also have Wyatt Russell back as U.S. Agent. Mm-hmm. And Taskmaster from the Black Widow movie. Now, I forget some of these guys' names in real life, but it's an interesting setup. Now, the entire idea behind the Thunderbolts and why I liked them originally when they first came out in the comics form was they were the Masters of Evil. They were the Masters of Evil dressed up to pretend to be superheroes while there was an absence of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and all the major superhero teams had been defeated by Onslaught. They stood in and filled in the gaps and pretended to be heroes whilst trying to earn security clearance and the trust of the federal governments and this, that, and the other thing. And so that was the real sneaky way. This, of course, was led by Helmut Zemo as Citizen V. And so that's what I think this is going to miss that mark a little bit on the origin of the Thunderbolts as it stood. We're not going to get that kind of take on it, but the Thunderbolts really became, over the years, a proving ground for villains kind of make their own way as trying to do heroic things, or like a Suicide Squad, if you will.
Yeah, it's Marvel's version of Suicide Squad, but what I thought was most interesting about that casting announcement was something you just mentioned. We obviously have a Baron Zemo in the mm-hmm. MCU. It's Daniel Brühl, and he's appeared.
He's fantastic.
Several times. He was great in Winter Soldier, and he also showed up again in the Bucky and Falcon series, and he was great in that as well. So I found that a little bit strange that they didn't announce him as being in that film. I think that they'd be remiss if they didn't at least have him kind of show up in a cameo situation. Because he traditionally is, at least in some iterations of the team, the kind of de facto leader of it. So the fact that they would bother having that character in the MCU but not have him necessarily announced as a cast member of the Thunderbolts, I find that interesting, and I think it's going to piss a lot of people off if they don't at least give that a hand wave or a head nod, a lampshade, if you will.
I think we should see a Citizen V in this series, or in this movie. I would be really, really cool to see him try to... Maybe they'll take it from him trying to be undercover and hiding to finding a way to redeem himself. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if that happens. I just want more Daniel Brühl. I really do.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's a great actor, and that character, what he does with it is fantastic. So we'll see. I think that's got a release date of next year, or maybe 2024, but we'll see it. It's going to be coming out.
Yeah, and so let's see. They showed a trailer for Werewolf by Night, the Halloween special. Which I hope it stays in black and white. It looked pulpy and fantastic, and We got a little bit more information about Wakanda Forever. We got a trailer for Marvel's Secret Invasion series, which featured very heavily Nick Fury. So I'm really and excited Maria about Hill. That. Yep. And of course, Don Cheadle was all over it, too. So,
yeah.
Interesting to find out. And then we got an announcement for Charlie Cox's return to Daredevil Born Again. They showed a new logo for it. And, of course, he's been
teased. Spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear this, plug your ears. But we got a little taste of... we all know Daredevil's going to be in the She-Hulk series. He was teased in the trailer before episode one even aired. Yep. But we got a little bit more information in the most recent episode of She-Hulk. If you haven't seen it yet, I won't spoil it. But definitely go and check that out if you haven't.
Right. Moving on to the Star Wars side of things. Mandalorian Season 3's first trailer dropped. Looked badass. Always a good opportunity to get a new look at Grogu and Mando. I love that. And apparently they're going back to Mandalore, where he's going to have to prove that he is a true Mandalorian. Which, of course, means he's going to go head-to-head with Bo-Katan as well, which will be interesting.
This is the way.
Let's see, what else did we get? Oh, as of today of recording, Andor drops its first three episodes, and I can't tell you how excited I am for that. That's going to be my Friday night sorted. Usually we use Friday night to catch up on all of the shows that Facebook's been trying to spoil for us over the course of the week. In this particular case, I mean House of the Dragon and whatnot. But they dropped three episodes at once, so that's a three-hour time chunk just fucking gone. We're going to get a pizza, we're going to sit down, and we're just going to watch it. So
great. It's appointment television, whether we want it to be or not.
Absolutely. They showed a trailer for Tales of the Jedi, which is a new animated series featuring young Count Dooku, young Ahsoka Tano, and Mace Windu. So I'm looking forward to that. And then there's a bunch of other different announcements as well. There was a bunch of different announcements, and like I said, we could seriously go on about this stuff forever. And of course, I sat there and rabidly watched all the trailers dropping and everything that I could watch on it. And so, I mean, I'm excited for all the Pixar, all the Disney. They own... said this multiple times. They own my childhood between Disney and Marvel and Star Wars and Pixar. That's like a 60% childhood share in Kevin. If they bought Nintendo, I'd be fucked, so...
I feel a little two-faced about it because out of the one side of my mouth, I want to condemn corporations and conglomerates and all that. But I mean, if you're going to be a corporation and a multi-billion dollar international conglomerate, then Disney kind of does it the right way. I mean, they haven't always been perfect, but their track record for hits is far better than the occasional misstep. And so agreed. I have to kind of tip a hat to Disney. If you're going to do it right, and Disney does it right. They just plain produce good entertainment across their entire empire, and you kind of can't argue with the results if the end kind of justifies the means in that.
Absolutely. So, but that was, I mean, like I said, that's a whole quick rundown. We were going to do a whole episode on it, but in the interest of staying as topical and as up-to-date as possible, we just figured we'd throw it out here. So, real exciting stuff coming out of the Disney camp, and I, for one, am here for our mouse overlords.
I own all this shit now! I own the Death Star! I own Tatooine! It's all mine!
Hashtag stoked.
Yes. So, today, what we wanted to talk about, we have a special guest coming on today. Now, I mentioned that, you had mentioned that you wanted to do, or you had an idea to do a podcast about something you're a super fan of, which is Saturday Night Live. And we've been talking around that, kicking that idea around a lot, and it's become especially topical given the exits and entrances of new and returning cast members. So we thought we would do a podcast about that. Now, the simple fact of the matter is you're not the only super fan of Saturday Night Live in the radius, and by that, of course, I mean...
That is true.
I'm going to have you introduce our special guest. Why don't you do that?
Well, our special guest today is not just a special guest on the podcast, but a special person in my life. I made mention of the fact earlier on that I came out to the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania to visit my lady, and because she is just as much of a fan of SNL as I am, I asked her to be a guest on the podcast. So our special guest today is Steph Chappelle, not just a SNL super fan, but also my partner.
Hi.
Hi, Steph. It's Hi, good to Kevin. Finally have you on the microphone for once. Now, for those of y'all who don't know, Steph sometimes is in the background of the podcast. She'll sit there while me and Jim are recording, and she'll have a listen. And Jim's taken to giving her one of the earpieces. That way, she could hear both sides of the conversation instead of just hearing the one side mm-hmm. a bit. But
I was gonna say it's kind of a Twilight Zone-y sort of thing here to be sitting here and listening and like not have to wait an hour and a half to go, oh my god, you guys said this at like mile marker 37 and I can't believe you said that.
37?
37.
I'm 37?
Going to class.
Oh my god. 37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
At least it wasn't 38.
But yeah, I too have been a huge, huge fan of Saturday Night Live. Jim is a little bit older than I am, so I am lucky enough that I can say
he's
that,
a little bit older than all of us.
I have always lived in a world that had Saturday Night Live in it, and for that I am extremely grateful. Growing up in this area here where I am, I have had the privilege and the luck even several times to be able to trek up there and actually kind of like rub some elbows with the people who are going in and out of NBC studios and meet a lot of members of the cast over the years. And
Steph's got some stories.
Oh boy, do I have some stories, but, but yeah, that is one of my personal nerddoms that we happen to share together. So I'm more than thrilled to be here to talk about it with you guys.
Yeah. And what's funny is that you say that you've never lived in a world without SNL in it. And I barely haven't, because that's one of the things that always kind of drew me to SNL. Was because SNL and I kind of debuted in the world in the same year, in 1975. So I've kind of grown up with SNL, and it kind of reminds me. It's slightly analogous to video games, where I am a fan of a form of entertainment that I've kind of grown up with. Mm-hmm. And SNL as a kid was kind of almost felt a little naughty, because I mean it was a weekend. You didn't have school the next day, so sometimes your folks would let you stay up a little bit later. And SNL, even though they've been on broadcast television for their entire duration of their run.
Right.
So they haven't really done any necessarily adult humor, but they have done some. Little winking things, little innuendo kind of things, but they have done sophisticated humor. And it just felt kind of like gaining admission to a world that sort of felt a little bit naughty. Like somebody was lifting the velvet rope and you were getting into a party that you shouldn't get in. You're staying up late and you're hearing jokes that are maybe a little above your head, and it kind of sparks your imagination. So I've always been a fan of SNL, and I've watched it throughout my entire life, and just really been, it's just kind of always been there for me, and I have always really loved it.
That was one of the places, like when I mentioned that me and my buddy Lee, we went up to New York to visit my friend Robert when he was going to Columbia University. Yeah. That's how we all ended up over in Red Bank at New Jersey and yada, yada, yada. But one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I saw while I was in New York was 30 Rockefeller Place or Plaza, mm-hmm. Rockefeller Plaza. And so we went in and of course they got the studio tour. So we took the studio tour and they walked us down the hallowed hallways of Saturday Night Live and into the bleachers, and yeah, I mean, it was great. It was really cool. I mean, the studio is a lot smaller than you would think it is, just because it's been such a big production over the years that you'd think that, you know, it'd be a much larger space, but it's like a black box theater kind of thing. And
mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh,
sometimes.
Yeah, age is tiny. It's mm-hmm. tiny in there.
They'll pull back and get wide angles on things, and you'll see just the. It's historic, and they've been there since the, you know, like I said, the mid 70s. But you'll be able to see when they do, you know, sometimes they do those interstitial bumps when they go to commercial, and the camera will pull back, and you'll see people like the set dressers and the cast dashing around, and that's a pretty compact space, and it sort of legendarily has been, which I think to some degree has kind of contributed to the drama that's come out of that show over the years. You get that many creative people, that many strong wills, and that many big egos kind of rubbing shoulders in a very compact space. And you have things like Chevy Chase swinging on people. You have things like writers throwing pencils at each other just to try and get their frustrations out. So that's all part of the DNA of the show, and a big reason, one of the big reasons why I've always loved it so much.
I mean, to be fair, like that's anywhere that Chevy Chase is, by virtue of Chevy Chase being there at the moment.
Yeah, so. I've been reading a lot of stories about him on the cast or on the set of wasn't it Community that he was
Community,
in
yeah.
the Dan Harmon show and.
Historically, one of the big things that they do for every episode of Saturday Night Live is that after the show. For each episode that they do, you know, everybody's been working really hard all week, and now they finally, like, have the fruits of their labor out there for people to have consumed by the time they leave 30 Rockefeller, and everybody gets in a limo and goes to a different place somewhere around Manhattan, and they all just have a nice little private party and a good time. However, every season open and season close episode, they go one step further. And at Rockefeller Plaza, you know, which most people, whether they've been to New York or not, you know, everybody gets that iconic thing of the plaza and the ice skating rink and all that
stuff.
Your
Atlas in front.
You know, during the rest of the year when it's not being used for ice skating, especially in May when the season ends mm-hmm. and in, you know, like September, October when the season starts, nobody is using the skating rink. They close the whole thing down. Everybody in the cast is welcome, and they're welcome to invite whoever they want. Anybody between the host and the musical guest is welcome to come and invite whoever they want.
Anybody who's ever been in the cast is welcome.
Except. The caveat to that is that the one person who is not invited out of everyone who has ever had anything to do with Saturday Night Live since its inception in 1975, and everybody allowed, you know, everybody that is connected to them, Chevy Chase is the one person who is not invited to these parties.
He's a very polarizing figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I just gave away like a trade secret, like, you know, like Chevy's just been sitting around for the last 30 years waiting.
Just sitting by his mailbox waiting for an invite.
His invitation is like, oh, well, I moved. Maybe it got lost in the... No, Chevy, like, you know, Fletch may live, but nobody yeah. in that particular building wants
your
you to,
your career
I'm
doesn't.
Sorry.
And I read an article not long ago where somebody, I don't know, it was Vanity Fair or Wired or something, did an interview, some Ziff Davis production, where somebody, they sent out some reporter to do an interview with Chevy Chase, and the reporter, he said, you know, you never can know with Chevy Chase because he's kind of like, part of the reason why people don't like him is he's a notorious prankster and kind of an asshole, but... To my eye and to my ear, he seemed genuinely worried and concerned and didn't seem to understand why his career has stalled out and why nobody wants to work with him. And he sort of took the opportunity in this interview to sort of like say, hey, if you're reading this, I'm available. You can hire me for things and it's okay. So Chevy Chase doesn't seem to understand why he is a pariah in Hollywood and elsewhere.
Chevy, you did it yourself. The calls are coming from inside the house, bro.
Yeah, you shit the bed there, bro.
Which sucks, because he did have a really strong movie between the Christmas and Vacation movie, or the Vacation movies, the Fletch movies, Three Amigos, and I mean, he was everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
He could have been a contender.
Yeah, he could have been a contender.
You don't understand, I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum, which is what I am, let's face it.
But, you know, when you think of, like, or SNL, when you think of it, express that as, like, an overall... We're going on 48 years now. This upcoming season is season 48. So, you've definitely got some track record there. And you've had hundreds of cast members and writers and other prominent people that have gone through. Even people that you didn't necessarily know were involved with SNL. Like, people forget that Conan O'Brien started his career as a writer on SNL. And, mm-hmm. and Bob Odenkirk was a writer on SNL. Al Franken was in the Senate and he was on SNL. Yep. A. Whitney Brown. These are all people that you didn't necessarily see in front of the camera that often. Occasionally you did. But these are all people that have been involved. So SNL, the impact that SNL has had on the culture cannot be overstated in terms of the people that it has brought to prominence. And so when you've got a year like this year, we sort of touched on this before. This is one of the classic rebuilding years that they talk about where... you don't lose the entire cast. The nature of the rotating cast of SNL is that you've got a lot of overlap. Some people stay, but they still think, the pop culture seems to think of SNL in terms of generations. You think back, well, there's the generation that included the original generation with Chevy Chase, and by, as of season two, like Bill Murray, Garrett Morris, and Lorraine Newman, and Gilda Radner, and that original cast. Then you have the Dick Ebersol years, where Lorne Michaels stepped away as producer, and things kind of went off the rails a little bit. You had a lot of kind of nobodies, like Denny Dillon, and Tim Kazurinsky, and Charles Rocket, RIP, and a lot of these people that we've sort of forgotten about. Even like Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey Jr. were on there for a little while.
Yeah, although the interesting thing I gotta say about that is, like, those years are probably, I mean, for anybody who knows anything about or likes anything about Saturday Night Live, the 1981, I should say, through 85 Dick Ebersol production years,
yeah,
are probably like the single most polarizing half a decade of television for those people.
Yeah,
you know, like nobody speaks highly of the cast that gave us Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, that's
which
the thing.
Is mind-boggling. Like, yeah. I understand that was the only good thing about those 5 years of SNL, yeah. But like, but like the trade-off, like, you got Eddie Murphy out of that. Are you guys really going to complain that much?
Well, that's the thing. See, people consider Eddie Murphy as being like a part of the next generation. He kind of led the next generation of like your who did we have after that? We had like Billy Crystal and Eddie Murphy, of course,
David
and then
Spade,
we had like Joe Piscopo, David, and then we transitioned kind of into like David Spade, Will Ferrell. Chris Rock and Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, and then of course that brings us into, you know, so people tend to think of, even though the cast always rotates, there's a lot of overlap in the Venn diagram between when a person X left and person Y came into the cast. You still think of like, and that kind of brings me to another point that I really feel like I need to make. I know I'm skipping around a lot here, but I have a weird chaotic
happens.
Thought process
what?
About no we never
no,
do that
no.
I didn't get into an argument, but I had to make a statement because SNL's been in the news a lot lately because this is another, as we said, rebuilding year. We have lost, as of the time of this recording, 8 cast members from the previous season. And I'm going to try and remember them from memory. We lost A.D. Bryant, Kate McKinnon, Kyle Mooney, Pete Davidson, and we lost Melissa Villaseñor, Alex Moffat, Chris Redd, and Aristotle Atari. Aristotle Atari was a featured player. Only because that's the other thing, SNL has their sort of farm league. They bring in featured players as a kind of a trial run, and they either sink or swim within a year or two. And some of the greatest cast members of all time have started out as featured players. Other ones kind of made a flash in the pan, 1 year appearance, and then left. So we've got some of those that are out too. Aristotle Atari is one of those guys. He came for a year and then he's gone. So he kind of falls into the same box as like Lauren Holt and also
Robert Downey
Paul
Jr.
Britton. Or... And Robert Downey Jr., they came for a year and then they were gone. But they announced 3 new cast members, and I'm going to try and pull up the article because them I do not remember. But one of them, I think, is really interesting. They've had a lot of firsts recently. Now, SNL has not always been, like most entertainment, has not always been great with representation. But they have their first non-binary cast member this year. Molly Kearney, who is a comedian, has been announced as a cast member. But yeah, there's been, I don't know the names of the other 2 people that they brought up, and I can't really find it, but I'm sure that we'll get to it eventually. But the reason I bring this up is because I there was a CNN article about the cast shakeup and the rebuilding season that is coming, and that debuts on October 1st, which is, 2 weeks from, this weekend as of the time of this recording, so this winds up being kind of timely. But the reason why... I tend to think of these things in terms of generations.
Before you jump in here, the new cast members, I got them right here. Let's see. Marcelo Hernandez, Molly Kearney, Michael Longfellow, and Devin Walker.
Okay, see, that's news. I thought they'd only added 3 people. I hadn't heard of Molly Kearney I knew, Devin Walker I knew, and... but some of those other folks I'm just hearing up for the first time today. So
Hernandez,
they're losing 8 people, they're gaining 4.
Right. Hernandez is a Cuban-Dominican stand-up comedian, writer-actor, who's opened for Jim Brewer, Gilbert Gottfried, let's see,
so Kearney, some SNL vets.
Kearney, who uses they-them pronouns, recently had a part in Amazon Prime's A League of Their Own TV series. I didn't know they were making a series about that. I'll have to check that out. I really enjoyed that movie.
Oh yeah, I mean, speaking of comedy and sketch comedy and stuff, anybody who would even remotely be a fan of a League of Their Own, whether it was the movie the first time around or any, you know, residual interest in an upcoming series, Abby Jacobson from Broad City is one of the leads in that, and from what I've heard, she is absolutely phenomenal. I have not seen it yet myself.
Same.
I was not a sporty kid, but I was definitely a girl power kid, so A League of Their Own was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. I will be watching the absolute crap out of that show and supporting everything about it.
Let's see. Longfellow, who's from Phoenix, recently featured in the Netflix is a Joke Festival as a stand-up. And Walker, who's from Austin, Texas, has writing credits that include Netflix's Big Mouth and Phoebe Robinson's Everything's Trash. So those are the four new additions. Now, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to make sure those out there.
I'm just sort of like, the reason why I bring this up is because since we think of SNL as a series in terms of generations of casts and everybody... I got, not in an argument, but there was a CNN story that was on Facebook, and I left a comment that wound up getting me both support and derision from, obviously, the sort of internet troll brigade. But somebody actually came in and said, oh man, SNL used to be funny. And that, in terms of, like, hot takes about Saturday Night Live, really pisses me off, because...
They've been saying that for years.
First of all, yeah, make no mistake, SNL's always been funny. Sometimes people do tend to ding those Ebersol years, as Steph just mentioned, as being kind of off years. But there were still, like you said, Eddie Murphy came out of that period of time. There were still some gems of sketches and characters and actors and actresses that came out of that period of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even going back to the Eddie Murphy thing, if the only thing that you laughed at for an hour and a half that Saturday night was buckwheat, I can guarantee you peed your pants.
Or Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
You know? I can guarantee you peeing laughing at that one sketch. For those 4 years.
But this idea that, SNL used to be funny, it's just bullshit. SNL's always been funny. People love to say SNL used to be funnier before for the same reason that people are like, oh, music was only good when I was a kid. It's not that it's good. It's just that you developed really warm memories around it because that's when you discovered it. Whatever cast was the most prominent when you came to SNL is going to be your favorite because you discovered this brand new television show. You heard things about it, maybe. You watched it. You laughed. You enjoyed it. And then when your favorite performers left and they brought new people in, you rolled your eyes and said, oh, used to be better before. SNL used to be funny. Well, you know what? Fuck you. It was always funny. And if you're going to sit there and say that you only liked it before because you preferred it before because that's when you discovered it, it's just, that's not the way pop culture works. It really isn't. So you need to keep an open mind about it. And I have watched SNL almost since the beginning. I remember watching it for the first time, I think during those Ebersol years, from 81 to 85, when I wasn't even 10 years old. And then, of course, reruns, you go back and you watch the older ones. And I can see, you know, you can watch them on Hulu now and all that. So SNL's always been funny. They've definitely taken some chances that didn't necessarily pay off in certain regards, but, you know, their whole thing is that they're funny. They've always been funny, and to sit there and say, oh, it was better when I was a kid, that's more of a reflection of you than it is of the show.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'll absolutely agree. I will say that myself, personally, I know that I came in, you know, I was born in 85, so, you know, like, I came out onto the scene when people were already like, oh, man, we gotta make SNL better.
Their best days are behind them.
And, you know, by the time I was up and kicking, and it was something like 1993, and you had the cast that included Phil Hartman, rest in peace, mm-hmm. oh my freaking God. Chris Farley, rest in peace, oh my freaking God. Kevin Nealon, who still to this day makes me piss myself laughing.
Yeah. I loved him on Weeds.
Dennis Miller, Kevin before Nealon he got egregiously obnoxious.
Yeah, he was
fantastic. You know, all these great people that are like David Spade and Adam Sandler, people who have become iconic household names in every single facet of entertainment since being there. And I'm not going to, like, obviously sitting here saying that every single name coming out of my mouth is an icon in the entertainment industry since that time.
It's a great
because
deal
of that time. I still, like, I'm actually really sad now to lose so much of the current cast.
Yeah.
You know, 30 years into my viewing of this, 40 years into my viewing of this. And, just to see the way those particular people work together and played off of one another, and
chemistry is such a huge part of that show. And always, oh my has god, been.
And like the, I know one of the big things for a lot of people, like the big deal about SNL is that the L stands for live, so mm-hmm. anybody can fuck up at any second, and yeah. they do, and they break character, and they flub lines.
Looking at you, Jimmy Fallon.
We're looking yeah. at you, Pete Davidson.
Yep.
Pete Davidson, too.
Yeah. We're looking at you, everybody, but Mikey Day, how does he do it? I don't know.
He's the only guy that I can think of that's never broken character on that show.
Exactly.
He's rock, that dude.
That amazing sort of, like, anything can happen sort of energy.
And often does.
But that's how I know that anybody who sits around saying, well, you know, SNL was fun in these years, and I actually laughed in these years, but not in these, is like, look, the people who are professionals at this, who have been doing this next to the same professionals for like the last decade, mm-hmm. cannot keep a straight face because the writers and the actors are so good and, at what yeah. they do.
A lot of the time that winds up being kind of a rolling eyes moment, especially like when it was like Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz back in the day. But other times it winds up in absolutely legendary talked about moments like the cowbell sketch with Christopher Walken and Will Ferrell doing the Blue Oyster Cult thing.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Or the original Debbie Downer sketch with Lindsay Lohan when Rachel Dratch was so fucking funny that absolutely everybody was moistening their chairs. You wind up with those moments. But because that like kind of fly by the seat of the pants nature of the L standing for live, anything can happen. And that sort of leads me into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is these sort of like, because it is live, there have been controversies.
I've got the list.
Oh yeah, things that have
talk
happened
about this.
I wasn't there for Ashley Simpson. Don't even ask.
Right.
Yeah.
But she then you.
I've never been there for Kanye. I've never been there for Kanye. Don't even fucking ask.
But the moments when things kind of go off the rails are sometimes the most interesting, because then that's when it really drives home. As polished a production as it is, and how the success rate they've had in bringing this quality entertainment week after week after week, season after season for almost 50 years. Are those moments when you sort of peek a little bit behind the curtain and you sort of see things start to fall apart a little bit. And we've got things like Charles Rocket getting fired from the show for dropping an F-bomb after playing J.R. Ewing in a Dallas sketch, and the entire cast dropping their jaws.
Charlie, how are you feeling after you've been shot?
Oh, man, it's the first time I've ever been shot in my life. I'd like to know who the fuck did it.
You've got Jenny Slate, who is one of the funniest cast members they've ever had on. It only lasted a season.
Oh, that was a tragedy.
It was a tragedy to lose her. And she's gone on to do such great things since then. She's one of my favorite ex-SNL cast members. But she only lasted a season because she screwed up and dropped an F-bomb. And she knew she fucked up, no pun intended, the moment that she said it. Because if you go back and watch that sketch, her face immediately starts to turn down. Sam Jackson...
Shit.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson dropped an F-bomb, and legendary 20-year now cast member Kenan Thompson rolled with the punches on that and was able to kind of come back from it. But
I want to thank my guest, the incredible Samuel Jackson.
Man, fuck.
Hey! Also, come on, Sam.
It's some bullshit.
Come on now. That costs money.
There have been a lot of controversies, and like Steph said, whether it's Ashley Simpson lip-syncing, or whether it's Kanye West going off on a rant, or I think it was Martin Lawrence who, during repeats of the show, they had to trim his monologue because he went so off-script, or whether you're talking about everybody, Bill Hader, and anybody who worked with him seems to agree that Justin Bieber was about the worst host, but with people like Steven Seagal kind of bringing up the rear as like never being welcome back, or Adrian Brody, who was inadvertently but still overtly racist when he introduced Sean Paul wearing a dreadlock wig and speaking in a fake patois. Yeah, so SNL has not been without its share of controversy, but that's part of the reason why we tune in, because of that L, that big, throbbing, purple, vein-streaked L that lets us understand that anything can happen at any time.
Yeah, not the anything can happen Saturday point, but more of the, like, you know, this person was on 5 minutes because you wouldn't believe how spectacularly and controversially they fucked up what could have been, the best thing for everyone on television.
Career-defining...
One of my favorite stories about that is that there are so many of those little near misses with people that are your iconic household names now that a lot of people don't realize never happened, that weren't controversial at all. And I think my favorite one of these is Catherine O'Hara. Everybody knows who the hell Catherine O'Hara is.
Yeah.
If you didn't know anything about her from, like, you know, the Beetlejuice or any of the Christopher Guest
Home
movies.
Alone or Schitt's Creek.
Or Home Alone, you know. Then you know her from Schitt's Creek, because who doesn't know anything about Schitt's Creek from, right, like, the last 5 years? So everybody knows who Catherine O'Hara is.
Right.
And she famously got her start alongside a lot of other big comedy alums, like, you know, Eugene Levy and the folks at SCTV.
Mm-hmm.
And her tenure there was from about 1976 until, and I'm not looking at it, you can correct me.
81, 82.
Actually, further than that. Oh, in 1981, okay, she was offered a spot on SNL, mm-hmm, for the first time. And she turned it down. But somebody else was supposed to be on the cast that year, and Ebersol couldn't come to salary negotiations with them. So they pitched her again, and she said she was going to join on and hop on board and get away from SCTV and switch over to SNL. It never happened. Famously, the next 2 years that she did in SCTV got her a string of roles in movies in 1983, 4, and 5 respectively, and everyone now knows who Catherine O'Hara is because she decided, you know, I don't really want to move to New York.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's nice that you're offering me this, but I'm basically already doing this show, and I already like the people I'm with, and
I'm getting some other roles based on the work I've already done, so...
Yeah.
You know, it'd be a lateral career move for me, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, just like twice. She was... Technically, she was a cast member of SNL twice and has never appeared on screen or had any contributions to any writing, because it was all just like a deal that was made that everyone went back on at the last minute.
I wouldn't say...
And that's why everyone knows who she is.
Having looked at Catherine O'Hara's body of work, I wouldn't say it's affected anything at all, so... Like you said, lateral.
Well, no, but granted, this was 1981, so you got to figure this was while she was someone who was only, I mean, this was like, at this point, she was Punky Johnson.
Yeah.
For people who are currently watching the show, like, she was a featured player on somebody else's sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
You know, and like, nobody knew who the hell she was outside of any kind of local comedy circles.
Yeah. But the thing is, had she joined in 81, she may not have had the career she has now, because those were the Ebersol years.
Ding, ding, ding.
And who knows what, mm-hmm, Tim Kazurinsky or Denny Dillon are up to right now.
And that's one of those things that so many people, like, there is such an amazing incestuous spider web of people that are SNL or SNL adjacent, just simply because this show has been around for almost 50 years.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the big controversies and all those things, they're, you know, they're naughty and they're fun and everybody wants to know all the sordid details. But the stuff that happened or didn't happen that nobody knows about and had nothing to do with anything sordid can sometimes be just as fun stories.
Near misses. Well, speaking of dirty details and behind the scenes things, I kind of want to open the floor up a little bit, because I have never been to a taping of SNL. I've been to Manhattan a couple times in my life, but never really been to 30 Rock. But being where you are here in the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania, you're roughly 90 minutes from 30 Rock in downtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So in your teen and 20-year-old sort of years, you and some friends used to be able to grab a $15 or $20 bus ticket and bust your happy little butts into Manhattan and go and hang out outside 30 Rock and rub elbows with the stars of the show.
Yeah, so the neat thing about that...
Just some dirt.
Well, the thing... Okay, so I was like a teenager. So I was completely invulnerable to everything.
Yes, immortal.
I did not care what I said or who I said it to. And, you know, of course, I was not a mature and nuanced woman of the world. I did not yet understand that, like, no, these people do not just exist to dance for my entertainment, and I don't get to talk to them that way. So
dance, monkey!
You know, there are definite, yeah. So there are definitely people that, like, we have gone up, my friends and I have gone up there in the past to get autographs, and, you know, like, here's one story famously, and just simply because I kind of feel like, especially since my last names, was thrown out at the beginning of the podcast. I will have people show up at my house if I actually give the name of the person. But let's just say this was like the Will Ferrell, Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon, Daryl Hammond years, and it was none of those four people. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jimmy Fallon and Tina Fey years. Also neither of those people. So if you understand that cast and I just got rid of like the six most famous people in it, I'll like go maybe like one or two and you'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Don't bring up God, okay? I'm the devil, remember?
My friend Brenda, shout out to Brenda, was the original SNL super fan in our group. And she got the SNL 25th anniversary hardcover behind the scenes crazy $80 coffee table book when it came out. Okay. So of course we took a bus, we went up there, and her goal, because we would go almost every weekend to go do this and would frequently try to hit up the season open and season close to get old cast members, was my goal now that I have this is to get the signature of every living SNL cast member contained in this book. Hmm. And when the 50th anniversary comes out, then I'll catch up on the next 25 years.
Yeah.
So we were so excited about this. She managed to get every single cast member to sign this book, and not just an autograph, but like a personal message in there written next to something.
Like a yearbook.
Yeah, like a yearbook. Like these people, like Will Ferrell flipped through and found the most ridiculous picture of him doing the More Cowbell sketch. And just took a silver Sharpie and like, you gotta have more cowbell, Will Ferrell. Like, he wrote her a silver Sharpie prescription for more cowbell on there, on his chosen favorite page. So it was such a great personal thing, and there was just one cast member that didn't sign it.
Only one.
Because she just was so busy. She mm-hmm. was just so busy. Everyone else in the cast had the time to come out and shake hands and take pictures and say thank you for the support and, you know, all of this stuff. But she was just so busy and so important. And so I definitely maybe might have gotten on one of my friend's shoulders and screamed, this person's name sucks cocks in hell, over the head of everyone. And this person definitely heard me and made direct eye contact.
Yeah.
So that is definitely a thing that I was stupid enough to do when I was like 17.
Well, we have mentioned the cast this person belongs to, but anybody who's listening, don't turn yourself inside out trying to figure out who it is.
Listen. Yeah, I mean, we just went up for a little bit of, you know, like sightseeing and recreation, and that's what we wound up getting out of it. So,
but the other thing about that is, like, I don't know if I've brought it up on the podcast before, but I have mentioned to friends in context that Jimmy Fallon kind of makes me crazy. He makes me crazy a little bit because when he was a cast member on the show, all the breaking he used to do, he and Horatio Sanz, and Horatio Sanz, of course, is in trouble now for alleged abuse and allegations
see,
of
And see, going
of,
back
of
to
assault.
That, going back to that, not the assault stuff, but the Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz, that always pissed me off, too, because you could tell they were doing that on purpose, which is a totally different thing than, you know, going back from, like, a season or two ago and watching, like, Matt Damon pretend to be Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
And no one in that room can keep their shit together.
Yeah.
I was the proudest, drunkest virgin you've ever seen. And everyone can relate to that.
Or watching Adam Driver's first hosting in the career day.
Yeah.
Where Pete Davidson looks like he wants to die because he can't hold in how hard he wants to laugh at Adam Driver's
but
portrayal
Fallon
of
Sanz.
This guy. But none of it is on purpose. You know, like you can tell that this is like, I'm trying so hard not to lose my shit because this is so funny and I can't take it.
But with Fallon and Sanz, it wasn't organic. They're
no,
new because
like,
they thought it was cute. They were Beavis and Butthead.
They did it again.
They were Beavis and Butthead about
it. I liked both of them at the time, but it was just very annoying. Very annoying.
Yeah, it was. But Jimmy Fallon makes me nuts because he thinks he's adorable, and that's the thing. And when you're a cast member in SNL, you can do sketch work, you can do gags, you can do all that. But since he's been hosting The Tonight Show, he makes me a little nuts because, they've always, even in terms of like going back to like Jack Parr and Johnny Carson, there have been bits that they've done in the run-up. There's the monologue, there's a couple of comedy bits, then they bring the guests out.
Right.
But Jimmy Fallon can't seem to understand that he is a talk show host now, and he's not on a sketch comedy show because of all the little things that he does. But the thing that makes me the most nuts about Jimmy Fallon is he assumes that he's so talented, he must therefore insert himself into everything. Your job as a talk show host, you get your moment at the top of the show, you do your monologue, but then you get the fuck out of the way and you let the guest promote whatever he or she is there to promote.
Right.
You don't set up like, oh, we're going to have Maroon 5 or U2 busk in the subway, but I'm also going to dress up with them because, hey, look at me, I'm Jimmy Fallon. You don't have people on the street come and talk to a poster of Tina Fey when the Mean Girls show opens on Broadway, women, to explain what Tina Fey has meant to them as creators and people, and then have Tina Fey walk out and say, hey, I heard every word you said, and I appreciate you. And then he walks out, hey, look at me, I'm Jimmy Fallon, I'm here too. Look at me, look at me, look at me. He makes me nuts because he has to be a part of everything. You're a talk show host now. Get the fuck out of the way. And the other thing that makes me nuts.
No, you're Rolf Fallon, gosh.
Right. Get in your lane, bro. You're doing a different job now. But
you
also
got one job, Jimmy.
You had one job. The other thing that makes me nuts is that he... Okay, Steve Higgins was also on Saturday Night Live. He still is a producer and a writer on SNL. But I first became aware of him back in the early days of the Comedy Channel, before it was Comedy Central, when he was on the Higgins Boys and Gruber. And I thought he was funny then. But he and Jimmy Fallon have this very strange chemistry where they do private jokes with each other in the run-up during the comedy bits after the monologue before the guests come out. And they say things, and only each one of them thinks the other is funny. They'll say things back and forth, and the audience in attendance at whatever taping episode that is, they'll titter nervously and offer polite laughter, but these two are cracking each other up and nobody else gets it. So Jimmy Fallon makes me nuts. However, every time that I have expressed this to Steph, I am not shamed, but at least reminded, you know what, I understand that he's a little bit annoying on screen because he's very precious and very giggly and thinks he's adorable, but Jimmy Fallon is also one of the nicest people who I've ever met in my life in entertainment.
He really is. He is genuinely one of the kindest people in the world. As I said earlier, after every show, everybody just sort of limos off to the after party. Every single cast member is given their own limo with their own driver, and they're split up on either side, parked on either side of 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Again, just so anybody listening knows, especially you guys, this is something that I used to do in, like, up until maybe, like, 2007. It's 2022 now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some of this stuff may have changed due to COVID, due to security, God only freaking knows.
Yeah.
But back in the day, which was a Thursday, I believe,
mm-hmm.
or in this case, a Saturday, they would park the limos up either side of the street, and everybody would have their own driver. And a lot of times, once it started getting towards the hour when people would be, you know, finishing up and coming out, the limo drivers would get out and stand by there so everybody coming out from the cast could see where their driver was, so they'd know where their car was. And, you know, that way, like, they would know by their driver, but no one would have to hold up a sign and then have the car mobbed because people are after that one specific cast member.
Right.
But if you go up there long enough, you learn to recognize, like, oh, that's Jeremy. He drives for Tina, so we should probably go talk to him if we want to make sure we get a picture with her afterwards. Yeah, you see the same people, and you see the same people getting in and out of cars, and you put two and two together and you do your math.
We were talking off camera before we started the podcast about my friends AJ and Patrick, who like to celebrity stalk. I used to call them celebrity stalkers, and I didn't realize it would have such relevance to the conversation that we're having today.
Well, I mean, we weren't that bad. I mean, the whole deal, like, they set up fencing so that because they know there's going to be a crowd there who wants to interact with these people on their way in and out of the show. They know it's a thing. We're not stalking anyone. You know, not only that, but, like, you know, I really hate to do the, you know, you're really asking for it SNL thing, but at the top of every episode saying, you know, filmed from in fabulous Studio 8H and NBC Studios at 30 Rockefeller Plaza, and, you know, you're kind of, if you don't want people to show up,
then don't give out the address.
Then don't give out the address.
Yeah.
Is that her?
Yeah, so we were not going to people's homes. We're not going to people's hotel rooms. It's not like there were cops there that were chasing us away. And, you know, like, you know, this is not some kind of weird buddy heist movie where we all dressed up like delivery men. And, and brought our Fisher-Price toolkits in there and said, oh, I'm just fixing the air conditioning, so
but they
where's
do
the
give
dressing
out the
room?
Address at the top of every show, and everybody knows they record the show and air the show at the same time every week, so it's not hard to figure out.
Yeah, they actually kind of
They give a bloody
to
tour of the studio, for God's sakes. Like I said, yeah,
they do, there, so. And famously, one of the reasons for showing up is even if you don't get into the taping, you still get a chance to meet everybody and get autographs and ask questions and pose for pictures.
But Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Fallon's limo driver apparently were both very, very kind to
They
you
were
friends.
Amazing. Both of them recognized that we were up there several times.
And harmless.
And yeah, and just harmless kids. And so during the winter months when it was especially cold up in New York City and we're standing out for 4 hours at a time in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
They were like, you know, maybe you guys could just wait inside the car and not freeze. So quite a few times, like, they made an agreement that, like, okay, as long as it's this person, and this person, and you know who they are, their crew can go hang out in the limo. And again, I don't remember his last name. The driver at the time, his name was Jeremy. Jeremy was Tina Fey's driver. He also did that for us. Tina and Jimmy's limos were very frequently parked together because they were very famously also very good friends in and out of the show. So, yeah. They would always be parked over there next to each other. And, you know, if we weren't in one limo, we were in the other just kind of hanging out. And it's funny because we would occasionally bump into people who would return from wherever they came from to come back and see if they could get into a taping or see if they could meet this new cast member or just go through the process again because it was a fun thing to do. And, we got quite a few eyeballs from people like, you were here last week sitting on someone's shoulders screaming at somebody over an autograph, and and this week you're like, why are you getting out of Jimmy Fallon's limo?
What's that about?
What's that about?
But I guess he's a really nice guy, so I kind of feel a little bit bad that he's just not my favorite person, and I kind of, him corpsing on SNL and him being cute on The Tonight Show, but apparently he's a nice guy, so I should really lighten up on him.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of SNL, like, I would rather gargle bullets and antifreeze than ever watch Pixels again, but Adam Sandler is hands down one of the nicest people in the entertainment industry.
I can't necessarily say
I'm the biggest Adam Sandler fan in the world. He's a true artiste. I don't really know that I'm ever going to repeat those words, especially seriously.
But a good guy.
But a great guy. Fantastic dude.
and I'm trying to think of other folks that over the course of the last couple of the year and a half or so, you've sort of mentioned as being, here's a story about that person. And one of them is coming to mind that I don't want to put you on the spot, but you had some interesting stuff to say about Tracy Morgan.
I was waiting for you to ask about Tracy Morgan.
You're clearly Tracy Morgan.
Man, I wish I was Tracy Morgan with his great smile and his six-pack abs and his six-pack dong.
Oh, God. Tracy Morgan is fantastic. He is not the life of the party. Just like if the party wasn't happening, he shows up and the party is there.
Mm-hmm. You know, hey, what's going on, everybody?
Yeah, I mean, this dude would regularly, like, he would wander slowly, sauntering, like, you know, like he's never been outside 30 Rock when he would walk out of there and just be like, hey, everybody, you know, and just look around like, what the fuck are all you doing here? And the same thing we were doing last week, Tracy, you were standing in line waiting to meet you, dog.
Yeah.
He walked out once, and I'm more than a little certain that he'd had some beverages.
A few cocktails.
Some beverages of the adult nature, yeah.
Yeah, as you would do.
As one does, yeah. Yep. And he swooped up behind myself and Brenda, grabbed himself a handful of butt in each hand, and was just like, how are you ladies doing tonight? Who wants to wake up pregnant tomorrow? Like, just saying, like, ridiculous, the most ridiculous, insane shit. And we're just, and somewhere there is a picture of Tracy Morgan flanked on either side by myself and Brenda, where he looks like he's ready to hiccup and fall down in a heap. And, Brenda and I look like someone is giving us a colonoscopy. And we didn't schedule it. So that's pretty much that's what the photo looks like. Somebody snapped the picture like the moment that happened. So Tracy Morgan is standing there in the middle just going, and we're on either side.
With
just
a double handful of butt.
What? Yeah. And like that sounds, I also just want to pause for just a moment and say that, like, yes, I got my like 19-year-old butt grabbed by Tracy Morgan when he was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
There is no part of me that has any problem with this. You know, it's not like at this point this person was a stranger. It's not like at this point this was the worst thing I've seen this person say or do.
Right.
It's not like at this point, like it came completely out of nowhere. I said, please don't think that I'm sitting here like I got sexually assaulted by Tracy Morgan, because I did it. I swear to God, I did not.
It was consensual, kids. It was consensual.
It was consensual. I didn't know he was about to do it, but even if he had told me or asked, I would have said yes. It was just a funny kind of thing. So please don't get the wrong idea about that. Anybody
not trying to blow
listening,
up Tracy Morgan's spot.
Not trying to blow up Tracy Morgan's spot.
Not trying
Morgan's
to put him
spot.
In that Horatio Sands box.
No. Oh, no. Yeah, let's not throw Tracy in the Sands box.
the Sands box.
In the Sands box. Not in my Sands box. We keep bringing up, like, the dark and dreaded Ebersol years of the 1981 to 85 season, but... interestingly, one of the things that brought SNL back from that sort of limbo period was the new set of writers that they brought in for the season in 1985 through 1986. And I don't know if you gentlemen know this, but two of those such writers are famously known for another absolutely hilarious sketch comedy show. Would you gentlemen care to hazard any guesses?
I would say,
I mean, he
Mr.
was a
Show,
writer, but this
Bob
was
Odenkirk.
Not... That was actually not what I was thinking
Yeah, I'm
about.
Drawing a blank.
1985 and 1986, they brought in a pair of Canadian writers by the names of Mark McKinney and Bruce McCullough.
Ah, yes.
Which should ring a bell for any fans of Kids in the Hall. Yes. And they started getting it, like, that's and that was also, I believe, the first year that Robert Smigel, who is most well known for a lot of the animated bits.
Yeah.
And
also
have,
being
the ambiguously
Triumph,
gay
the insult comic dog.
Yes, and for Triumph the insult comic dog. You know, so starting with that season, they had a whole new set of writers in there to kind of give the show a new kind of format, a new kind of spin, a new sort of energy, and a new perspective. And it's kind of interesting to me that people like that were so involved with such important pivotal moments of that show. And because they were writers, nobody knows that they had any sort of link to this at all whatsoever.
But what's interesting is that the Kids in the Hall, people forget that Lorne Michaels was also Canadian. He is from Toronto, and obviously the entire cast of Kids in the Hall was also from Toronto, and the Kids in the Hall was a Broadway Video production, which is Lorne Michaels' production company. So there's a lot of kind of crossover in the DNA there.
Right.
And there's, you can also, if you go through, and I would actually suggest anybody who's a big fan of SNL who has not tracked any kind of history, like, Do your due diligence and waste your time falling down the Wikipedia rabbit hole of all the, okay, well, here's the main SNL article, and every
That's
single
what
thing
I'm
underneath
doing
it has
now.
Its own list article.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, go through season by season and take a look at the writers, and you can actually see partnerships that are known in entertainment and comedy entertainment specifically.
Like David
Cross
and Bob Odenkirk, like Mark McKinney and Bruce McCullough.
Exactly. So you got your 85-86 season when people like Robert Smigel are brought in, and then by 87-88 Conan O'Brien is in, and then within like 5 to 10 years Triumph the Insult Comic Dog is one of the hugest bits on late night television.
For me to poop on,
yes. So, like, you can basically look at that and say, like, okay, sometime around, like, 1987, the seeds were planted for one of the hugest, if not kind of dumb, like, little comedy things to come.
Although what's really funny about that is it's not, being associated with SNL is not necessarily a good predictor of any kind of future success, because there have been just as many cast members that showed up for one season and then really went nowhere. There have been just as many characters, like, for every Wayne's World and Blues Brothers, you have a ladies' man, or it's Pat, that was supposed to be like the next big comedy movie to, or
Pat
Night at the Roxbury.
Pat did not age well.
Well, no. Then take a look at exactly where Aristotle Athari is right now. That guy has spent the entire season, every single episode. If he is at least in one sketch, he is playing the same recurring character. That guy, as a featured player, was doing the mumble singer. If you look in the last season that he's been in there, if you go back to, okay, well, I watched it on TV, or I watched it on Hulu or on Peacock later, versus going to the YouTube channel and watching the entire show one sketch at a time. If you go to YouTube and do that, they will even mention, here's a sketch, cut for time.
Yes.
Here's a sketch, cut for time. And because it was cut for time, you're not going to see it in the stream edit.
Yep.
You're only going to see that sketch in you know, single serving on YouTube.
Right.
The most cut sketch
is Aristotle.
Is Aristotle Atari's character.
Yeah.
I wouldn't return back either. I don't know if that's a him thing or a them thing, but, you know, if I was told play this character every week and that's the one sketch that got cut, I wouldn't come back.
No, it's a rough road to hoe for
I wouldn't
guy.
Come back. And those things are, those sketches are often pretty funny. I mean, I had to laugh my ass off at Rami Malek standing there with an absolutely ridiculous Hermione Granger-ass wig.
One of the few times that actually made the episode.
Performance flags.
Well, SNL, the new season of SNL kicks off on October 1st, and this article just came out yesterday.
Happy where birthday, they have announced, Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've announced the first three hosts of the show. First kicking off the season is going to be Miles Teller, who you may remember from Top Gun Maverick, and you may probably not remember from the horrible Fantastic Four. But he's, you know, he was great in Whiplash. He was really good in War Dogs. He's got a career, despite having a couple of missteps. And Kendrick Lamar, who's making his third appearance on the show as musical guest, will be back for that episode. That's going to be great. Brendan Gleeson, who you may have seen in Harry Potter or Star Wars. He also played Donald Trump in The Comey Rule. He's going to be the October 8th host, and Willow Smith will be the musical guest on that. That should be interesting. And then,
I hope he doesn't play Trump if she decides to whip her back and forth, because
I think, well, you know,
mess.
James Austin Johnson, not
I'll just see a
is
mess.
James Austin Johnson, is that his name?
James Austin Johnson.
James Austin Johnson. Mm-hmm. He is probably the best presidential impressionist they've ever had, and it's really sad they didn't add him to the show until after Trump was out of office.
I will say one of the best impressionists in general. Yeah. I am absolutely psyched seeing all the main players that are leaving the cast this year, and knowing that he is one of the featured players who's supposed to return. I would be very sad. And honestly, at this point, kind of surprised not to see him bumped up to a main repertory player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's then incredible.
The third episode of the season on October 15th, a somewhat controversial figure in pop culture lately, but not for the reasons you might expect, Megan Thee Stallion will be making her debut as host, and she'll be pulling double duty as musical guest and host. And of course, all of the fanboys who do not understand She-Hulk and how she's kind of always trucked in goofy humor and fourth wall breaking moments on the page got really pissed off about Tatiana Maslany as She-Hulk and twerking with Megan Thee Stallion, as Megan Thee Stallion was a plot point in an episode of She-Hulk recently. The very same fanboys who said nothing when Deadpool breaks the fourth wall, or when Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker or Spider-Man comes out and does his little dancey dance, or when, you know, Star-Lord does his little dance-off with Ronan. Was it Ronan?
Yes.
So
Ronan the Accuser.
People who don't say anything, they don't say anything about that, but of course, She-Hulk twerking with Megan Thee Stallion in the tag of the episode in which they both appeared, that's unacceptable because misogyny is alive and well in America. But those are your three guest hosts, and the musical guests are going to be kicking off the new season. And I mean, it's season number 48. I'm looking forward to it. Although, at the risk of ending on a sad note here, Kenan Thompson, I originally started thinking about doing this episode when Kenan Thompson was doing an interview, because he was, his show, Kenan, his sitcom that he was on with Chris Redd, who's another person who's leaving this year, got canceled. And so they asked him kind of, well, what's your future with SNL? Are you going to stick around for your record-breaking 20th season? You've already broken records for being the longest-lived cast member. Mm-hmm. I think he passed up Tim Meadows, who did 14 or 15 seasons.
Actually, no. The technicality on that is that second to Kenan Thompson's 20 years on screen for SNL. And I mean, he's been around doing sketch comedy. Like, that's in his blood. He grew up
doing Good Burger with Kel Mitchell.
Doing all that with Kel Mitchell. I mean, if this guy is doing amazing sketch comedy until the day he dies, I would be very surprised, because he's so fucking good at it.
Yeah.
I was, like, growing up watching all that, I can't even tell you how thrilled I was when they announced that he, as an adult, was now joining the cast of Saturday Night Live, because I can't remember how many times I sat at home watching SNCC going, I hope I see these guys on that show someday.
Yeah, that's getting a promotion to the
big
leagues.
You know, like, that's one of those, like, I've been with you since the beginning, Kenan, I rooted for you.
Yeah, that's funny.
He's been there for 20 years.
I was just talking to my daughter about Kenan and Kel the other day, because she's watching... one of those Dan Schneider Nickelodeon shows. He did so many shows, and he's such a controversial figure in...
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
We could do a whole episode on Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead, which that's another episode.
It's on my list of things to read. Now, I tell people I know more about iCarly than any grown man should. I used to work in home care, and the only thing that would placate one of the house guests or mates that I lived in the house I worked at for developmentally delayed adults was Nickelodeon, SpongeBob, and Fresh Prince repeats, and iCarly and Victorious, and all of these other Dan Schneider produced television shows, which, you know, I got the privilege to watch. But Dan Schneider, of course, being a very polarizing figure. Who cut, I guess, was cut ties from Nickelodeon back in 2019, but was, of course, responsible for all that and the movie Good Burger.
Yeah, who started his career in front of the camera on Head of the Class with Howard Hessman in the 80s.
Right.
And I watched that, too. That was a good show. Yeah.
So I was explaining who Kenan and Kel were, because Kel was in one of the episodes that she was watching of this show called Harvey Danger or Henry Danger. About this teen with superpowers, and it's one of those Schneider productions. And so I was explaining the whole Kenan and Kel thing before I dove into a Wikipedia rabbit hole about how terrible Dan Schneider really is. So,
Well, yeah, honey, you see, first you got to welcome them to Good Burger, and then you got to let them know that not only are you there, but this is also the home of the Good Burger, and then you have to take the order.
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
Yeah.
Right.
That's usually how it goes, yeah.
Kenan's been around for a long ass time.
Kenan has famously been there for 20 years. Yeah.
And so when they asked him recently both about the cancellation of his self-titled sitcom and also what his future with SNL was, he seems to indicate that Lorne Michaels, I don't know if this was something Lorne had announced at the time, but it's kind of been out there. Lorne is planning to retire at the end of season 50. So we got two more years of Lorne being at the helm of SNL. And so partially based on how widely reviled those Ebersol years were in the early 80s, they asked Kenan, well, so what's going to be the future of the show? Do you think it'll stop? And Kenan said, yeah, I think that'd be a good stopping point at 50 years. That'd be a good run. And even though, like we said, the Ebersol years are very polarizing and a lot of people didn't like them, I think it would be a goddamn shame for SNL to ever end. It's just been on the air for so long. It's such an institution. Like you said, it's broken so many stars. It's had its finger on the pulse of politics and pop culture and the news for so long. I would be heartbroken personally if SNL were to ever stop. And I kind of really hope that, even though obviously Kenan's forgotten more about it than I'll ever know, and Lorne has steered the ship for since its inception, it would just be a real bummer if SNL were to ever go away, and I kind of hope that doesn't wind up coming to pass.
Well, it's one of the longest-running shows in history, so, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and, like, even to circle back to one of the things that we brought up at the beginning of the whole conversation, that the idea that for everyone who has ever watched and fallen in love with SNL, they have that one little... And it's usually, like, a 5 to 7 year sort of generation gap.
Contracts are usually 6 years. I mean,
yeah, they're like
Kenan notwithstanding.
Yeah, Kenan notwithstanding, like, not looking at contract negotiations. If you give it about 5 years... and watch like an episode from SNL like 1980 versus like 1985, that's about how long it takes to cycle through an entire set of cast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And get like so an SNL generation is like 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
everybody has their own cast that they love the most. You know, we were talking about how, well, the one that I started watching is the best one.
SNL used to be funny.
You know, for as crappy as that sort of, like, gatekeepy, you know, my SNL is better than your SNL, you know, dick measuring contest stupidity is, I don't know that I want to live in a world where other people in the future are not free to fall in love with their own SNL casts and have their own special memories around that and, you know, see the starting points of some of their own future favorite movie stars and comedians and writers and other entertainers.
Certain things seem to be immortal and eternal. And of course, we're kind of going through a lot of that now. I remember reading that 90% of the UK doesn't remember a world without Queen Elizabeth in it. And of course, her funeral was just the last couple of days. So there are huge swaths of the public who don't remember a world without SNL in it. I'm one of them. Steph's one of them. You're one of them. SNL and I popped out in the same year. So there's never been a world that I've lived in that does not have SNL to look forward to every Saturday night or on streaming or what have you. So I hope that that continues to be the case. Obviously, people are not immortal, but creativity can be. So I really, really genuinely hope SNL never goes away.
And there's so much, it's just one of those great things, especially comedy. You know, people come together over music, people come together over literature, people come together. I mean, you guys were talking at the start. I'm a big horror fan. I know you guys aren't so much, but I mean, as a lover of the genre, you know, fear is such a visceral and sometimes very deep and personal thing. And people who get into a genre built on that often find very, like, deep and intense connections and friendships with other people who are also genre fans, because to connect over something that is so deeply personal, how, you know, if you both share that together, how do you not wind up connecting with another human being over it?
That's what it's all about.
And I feel like comedy is the same thing. There is no one on this planet who doesn't like to laugh. And if they do, I don't want to meet them. I don't ever want to meet them.
I mean, it's one of those, like, you never ask anybody, do you like music? It's what kind of music do you like?
Exactly. And comedy is the same way. Everybody needs to laugh.
I hate to laugh.
Everybody likes to laugh.
I love to laugh.
I knew I shouldn't have come on this podcast. Never again.
Yeah.
This guy just hates laughter.
These guys hate laughter.
Well, that's why, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves when I was trying to be on dating sites is when somebody would say, I just love to laugh. And I just always wanted to say, really? Because most people fucking hate that shit.
Damn it, I've been searching for the one miserable bitch out there who would just make my life even worse than it already
is. I love to laugh. That tells me so much about it. Don't tell me you love to laugh. Tell me what makes you laugh. What do you like to
laugh at? Yeah, I can't make you laugh if I just know that it happened.
I like to have fun. Well, you know, that's what fun is. Yeah. Things you enjoy. So don't tell me you like to have fun. Tell me what makes you laugh and tell me what kind of fun you like to have. And for me,
you know, I like to breathe. I like to breathe.
Yeah.
I eat food.
I'm a fan.
I convert oxygen to carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. I'm a carbon-based life form that lives in the universe. Great, thanks for that.
Yeah, I try to schedule time for sleep every day.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's one of my favorite hobbies. Yeah.
To varying degrees of success, usually.
I guess the point I'm trying to make, though, is that, you know, it's one thing to say, I really like this thing, so I feel like it should always be there for me. It's another thing to realize that again, you know, I've always lived in a world that had SNL in it, but SNL existed before I did. And, you know, there are years that I like missed out on, and I have had to go back and watch those old episodes that I didn't get a chance to see because I was having a life on a Saturday night as like a 25-year-old lady. But, you know, so you miss out on some of that stuff and you realize, you know, that was there for other people. And it's kind of nice to know that it's always going to be there for people, because it's a good thing that's there for people. I mean, when you look at other shows that have had an on-screen tenure for the length of time that SNL has, the only other shows that have been on the air in their iteration, I'm not talking about like, okay, well, Quantum Leap aired for a couple of years.
Now it's coming
And now we're getting a new Quantum Leap. No, I'm not talking about this.
Version of Star Trek.
Yeah, there's always been some version of Star Trek, but the original series is not still on the air making new episodes.
Coming up on 50 years later.
You know, William Shatner climbing up a mountain in a girdle,
No, he did that in 5.
Yelling at snowflakes. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He sure did.
But, you know, SNL, to a certain degree, can be eternal and immortal if the people behind it would like it to be.
But
and
if you look at all the other shows that have been on the air as long as SNL, if not, like, you know, getting close second or who have outpaced them, the only shows are news.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just news. It is fact. It is, it's not even infotainment. It's not even, you know, it's not even as inventive and entertaining as watching the absolute shit show circus that is Fox News, which is neither Fox nor news.
Mm-hmm.
news, whenever you tune into news is usually bad news. You know, it's sensationalized. It's miserable. This is the hole that the country, if not the world, if not the solar system, is plunging itself headlong into this week.
SNL gets to come along and do Weekend Update, and they get to kind of make light of some of the better elements.
Absolutely. It is like, it is the anti-news. It is the thing that, you know, there will always be a program running somewhere to tell us the worst things out there in the world and show us the most horrific things that are available to us. I feel like the world needs an SNL alongside of that, as long as that is a thing.
I think Weekend Update is pretty much what brought us things like The Daily Show or The Colbert Report or things like
Those things would not exist if Weekend Update
wouldn't exist without it. Yeah, absolutely. And so you guys talk about the longevity of SNL, and I think the only word that really can serve to describe SNL at this point is just influential, because you've never seen a show that has the staying power that SNL has had, good or bad or whatever. 48 years is nothing to sneeze at. You don't see a show with the rotating cast of characters coming on screen that we have with, I didn't even get through 3/4 of the list of just household names that have come onto that stage at 30 Rockefeller Plaza.
Seth Meyers and Fred Armisen,
too. Oh, my God, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with people who have been in the cast that did not go on to do amazing, incredible things that we're all still talking about today.
The writer's room and just the movies and the pop culture and everything that has come out of this one
about
show.
Influential. And something about the pressure cooker of that show, having to put on a live show that's 90 minutes every week between writing and acting and all the other elements of magic, all the gears, the moving pieces that have to be. It's a pressure cooker, and it turns lumps of coal into diamonds that are then able to go forth into the comedy world, into the entertainment world, and just they can handle anything. If you can survive SNL as a comedy boot camp, there's nothing that the world can throw at you in entertainment that you're not going to be able to handle from that point forward.
But the
Fueled by cocaine.
Hey, little boy with the balloon. Check this out. Cocaine. Don't tell nobody. Hey, Mr. Police.
I love that you use the words comedy boot camp, because I'm sitting here thinking in the back of my head, not comedy boot camp, but like a comedy mad scientist lab. Simply because I think one of the most unique and really not just individualized but very special things about Saturday Night Live is that it allows creative people who write, people who perform, people who act, people who tell jokes, people who sing, who dance, it allows people to be creative in such a completely original way. And I say that in that, you know, nobody talks about Megan Thee Stallion as an actor.
She's a performer.
Nobody talks about her. Nobody talks about Billie Eilish as an actor.
And these people
came on to perform in ways that were new and interesting to them and their creative processes in ways that we don't usually get to see. And I think that's a very special thing that a lot of people kind of connect with who are big SNL fans like myself, too, is that not only do you get to see some of your favorite entertainment artists, some of your favorite performers perform the way they do, but you get to see them step out of their comfort zone and try something different or try something for the first time. I don't feel like you can watch an episode of SNL and see the cast or sometimes even the musical guest that they bring in for like a cameo in a sketch and see them as typecast.
Yeah, that anything and goes nature of the live television, anything can happen, up to and including the host, because we've had political figures, we've had athletes, we've had newscasters. Obviously, they trend toward actors and musicians and comedians, but you've had people like Brian Williams host. You've had people mm-hmm. like Steve Forbes, famously, who kind of fell on his face when he was running for president back in the early 90s,
Most recently, Elon Musk.
Which was kind of a shit show.
One of the worst episodes I've ever seen.
But they also know how to throw people in front of the camera that maybe you wouldn't necessarily expect to be there, and that generates interest, because you're thinking to yourself, wow, they're having somebody like that person host? That's going to go one way or the other, and either way, I kind of want to see which way it goes. So people tune in, and people talk about it. It becomes water cooler conversations. From the few pieces of television, even though they do a lot of their business on streaming now, because it is Saturday Night Live, it's both a descriptor and the title of the show. It's still, to some degree, appointment television and water cooler conversation, even though there's streaming and remote work now. You still have SNL creating these moments in the culture that people go forth and talk about. And boy, I just really hope that continues.
But that also, I've seen that in action open even more doors for people who already seem like they're at the top of their game. And by that I say, another good example. I keep going back to the first Adam Driver episode. Not that the second one was any less funny, because it was not. He is amazing. And both of those episodes, if you haven't seen him in the last few years, definitely go back to your Hulu, your Peacock, your YouTube, wherever you can get
your SNL. And you don't think of comedy when you think of Adam Driver.
No, you don't. Howsoever, because of the fact that he came out, and now this is kind of an aside, but for people who are not, who may not be savvy about, you know, like this dude who suddenly came out on the scene starring in a Star Wars movie and every single thing you've seen for the last 5 years, where the fuck did Adam Driver come from? Well, I'll tell you what, he was a Marine, and then he basically did like USO acting and comedy for other enlisted men and women and other veterans. And that launched him into you know, being on screen.
See, also Rob Riggle.
Yeah. And he, before his fame, did famously a lot of, like, live improv sketch comedy kind of stuff. And a lot of, like, goofy slapsticky kind of stuff. Because, I mean, he was a Marine. He could take the punches, and he could throw himself around and do all of these things. But... you know, he bust out on the scene as Kylo Ren, and everyone saw him as so dark and brooding and mysterious and so intense and so serious. And so those first couple roles that he had that just skyrocketed him to fame were so far on the other end of the spectrum from what his chops really are, that mm-hmm. once he was riding that Star Wars Kylo Ren current right onto the hosting duties for SNL, dude walked in the room and he was like, please let me do comedy. Like, I realize that's why I'm here, but, like, most likely you guys are going to have me be the straight man because of what you know, because of the roles that put me here in the first place. I want to write silly shit, and I want to make a complete ass of myself, and I want to make everybody laugh.
And they turned him loose, and so we wound up with legendary sketches like the Career Day sketch.
Oh,
and
my also God. Hands
undercover
down, one
boss,
of my favorite
Undercover
ever.
Boss Starkiller Base, which people still talk about.
A buddy of mine saw Kylo Ren take his shirt off in the shower, and he said that Kylo Ren had an 8-pack. But Kylo Ren was shredded.
What? Your friend's a liar, man. Kylo Ren is a punk bitch. That guy looks like he weighs 30 pounds soaking wet underneath that little black dress.
Tim?
Tim!
Oh no, he's choking on food. I see what's in your mind. It is...
stupid! Dude, Matt straight up sucks.
Yeah,
both I love of those, that
and those are instances where not only is that one of those, like, okay, now that you're here, go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, go nuts. Do the things that you want to do. You know, you're so restricted by the things that got you here, so, like, use this as a platform for something else. And since then, I mean, we've seen Adam Driver in quite a few very funny roles and taking on things that maybe aren't quite as serious. I mean, there are so many times in it throughout Black Klansman that I was in tears. Yeah. I was in tears.
Well, the really sad thing is that as much as I love SNL, as much as you love SNL, I could talk about SNL for days, and I feel like we kind of have, but I'm looking at the timestamp I'm recording, and we're pushing the length of, this might be one of our longer episodes. So, unfortunately, as much as I hate to do it, I think we may need to reach a stopping point, because I love this stuff, and I really could talk about it.
We could literally talk about it forever.
Yeah, so can I. I mean
it's like 48 years. You can't compress it into one podcast. But before we do take off, I wanted to, and I know this might be a polarizing question, and I fully accept it. Favorite cast member and favorite sketch. And I guess I'll go first. And I don't know that...
I was actually really curious to hear both of you guys' answers to these same questions, so I'm glad you're asking them.
It's difficult to say, like you say, because there's cast member from every different season or every different... not necessarily season, but generation of cast members that is influential and great. But as far as body of work and just, I don't know, kind of toss up between old school with Eddie Murphy or new school with Kate McKinnon. And Kate McKinnon, she had to grow on me because, you know, she was just... I don't know. She was just kind of...
How dare you not instantly be in love with Kate McKinnon? She's amazing. I love her.
She is. And I became a real big fan of just... She's just able to insert herself into any kind of role and just kind of run with it. As far as favorite sketch goes, if I was going to go back and pick a sketch, I'd probably have to go old school and John Belushi's Samurai. For whatever reason, it's so visual and so just intense. Like I said, fueled by cocaine.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so was like the first 20 years of that show, Kevin.
Well, right. That's right. That's why it's got the longevity. It's still running on fumes.
Well, if I had to pick a favorite of both sketches and of cast members, I'll start with cast member first. A controversial choice, and one that maybe a lot of people would kind of roll their eyes at. But I have always been in Pete Davidson's corner. Yeah. I love Pete Davidson. He brought a new energy to SNL, a youthful energy. That he was the youngest cast member ever. They got hired when he was 19. Yeah. But he was always so upfront. He really elevated the discourse on being upfront to talk about mental illness, to talk about loss. He famously lost his dad in 9/11. He struggled with addiction. He took a bit of a sabbatical to go to rehab, and he's very upfront and frank about it. He always talked about mental illness in a way that was both funny and endearing. I've always been in Pete Davidson's corner. Love that guy. He just left. It's going to be a bummer watching the show without him, but I think he's going to go on to do great things. Favorite sketch? I don't know that I can necessarily pick a favorite sketch, but there's a favorite... If I could pick a favorite recurring thing that happens on the show... I, to this day, can go back and watch the compilations of appearances by Stefan and have to go to the bathroom right in my pants. Bill Hader as Stefan, even though it's more of a character than a sketch, every time it makes me laugh. And it's funny because SNL has always done a combination of broad humor and also very specifically like New York humor. And Stefan is a very New York character because he mentions things that are very local, and it's the club scene thing, and New York has a very seedy underbelly of, like, nightlife, and that's kind of what the focus is. But Bill Hader as Stefan even though you can sort of make the argument that, well, he's playing a character that presents obviously very sort of like queer baiting, and Bill Hader is a straight actor, I think it kind of falls into the same category as another SNL vet of Robert Downey Jr. doing blackface in Tropic Thunder. Because it is so over the top, and because it is the point of it is making fun of
anyone who'd be stupid enough to do it in the first place. That's so funny. I was just talking about.
You're putting the idiocy in the mouth of an idiot, so you're not actually making fun of the homophobia or the racism. You're making fun of anybody who is homophobic or racist. So Bill Hader is Stefan, even though it's not really a sketch, is my favorite recurring bit, and I will always be in Pete Davidson's corner.
Fantastic. All right, so and now the one to go for. Let's see. Put you on the spot.
So hard. Okay. So I'm going to cheat a little bit because once again, like there is so much about that show from start to finish, from 1975 to present, and hopefully, knock on wood, all the future seasons beyond 50, no matter whether or not Lauren is there. got my fingers crossed. I would say old school cast, like old school. my favorite. I will give you an old school and a new school favorite male and female cast member. Okay. Like I will give my caveats. Okay. Again, Eddie Murphy, comedy legend. No one made me laugh through my childhood quite as hard as Eddie Murphy.
Working for love in all the wrong places. Working for love.
Female cast member, Gilda Radner.
Oh, yeah.
Gilda Radner was one of the funniest, not just women, but human beings who has ever been on this planet. She was so funny. She
legendary.
Was so committed. She was an absolute legend.
She'd do anything for a laugh.
She would. And she was, she was so amazing. She's fantastically one of the great, like, female physical comedians.
Agreed.
That we have seen in any age. You can't say anything about how great SNL is or the history and legend and all that without talking about Gilda Radner. Again, rest in peace. Another fantastic person that we unfortunately lost from SNL alum. My favorite. It's really hard to pick a favorite new one. I have to agree with Jim that Pete Davidson is one of the funniest people on the planet. And just as far as human beings and everything that his career by way of the vehicle of SNL is bringing into the forefront for, you know, other people to relate to and support, I think is really fantastic. Again, for all the same reasons that Jim mentioned. As I said earlier, Kate McKinnon is one of the funniest people in the world. I love her so much.
Those alien abduction sketches, there's Kate, a reason why they
God.
Ended on that
oh
note
my
with
God,
her.
Yes. It's
she exited
so
on that
funny.
Sketch
it's
for a reason.
So funny. She also, and I think one of the reasons I love Kate McKinnon so much is because she reminds me so much, like her brand of comedy reminds me so much of Gilda Radner. It's very physical.
Yes.
It's very, very devoted to whatever I need to do to make this as hilarious as possible to everybody.
She's so committed.
She is absolutely committed. Howsoever, I have to go back and I have to say that I have no one single favorite cast member.
I knew it would be difficult while I asked. But.
Howsoever.
Yeah.
2005 to 2012 brought us an entire 7-year stretch of Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig doing comedy on the same stage at the same time. And the two of them together during the time that they were on that show are collectively my favorite cast moment.
They are they're
of SNL.
SNL has a history of legendary, whether it's Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry, whether you loved him or not, Horatio Sanz and Jimmy Fallon, whether it's Tina Fey
and Jimmy Fallon. Or Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, yeah.
Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, but Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler. But yeah, those
Mike
two,
Myers, Dana Carvey.
The two of them together. Yeah,
right.
The two of them together was just, I mean, that is comedy gold. You get the two of them in a room and tell them to do what they do and they will
Spade
do it
and Farley.
You will die.
But Hader and Wiig are two of the, that's a combo that just never missed. They hit every time they were out.
We're leaving.
Our thing did not go
it
well.
It didn't go well. We're having a terrible time.
We worked so hard on it.
We started writing it last year.
And it went awful.
But you look great.
So do you.
Thank you. That's all that matters. Bill, it's okay.
All right. So I would say then my favorite recurring sketch would be the alien abductions.
Mm-hmm.
Easily the alien abductions. Oh my God, they're so funny. Kate McKinnon nails it every time. It is absolutely ridiculous. You can watch every single person, whether it's the people she works with every week or the guests that they bring on there, try not to lose their shit.
Watching Bobby Moynihan and A.D. Bryant almost pissed themselves.
Yeah, the writers absolutely knew what they were doing with every single person that they sat down in every seat in that room for that sketch. And it is just
And shout out to Cecily good. Strong for being the straight man, essentially, in those sketches. Whoever the third cast member was usually like the
too.
Host or hostess for that. Mm-hmm. Like whether it was Liev Schreiber or whether it was, you
famously
know,
Ryan
Gosling,
who could not make it through either one of the sketches he was in.
But it was always Kate
laughing.
And Cecily and then a third person. And then usually until, and then it was Mikey Day and A.D. Bryant for a while after Bobby Moynihan left. But, mm-hmm. but you know, Mikey Day who wouldn't break at gunpoint. But watching Bobby Moynihan and A.D. Bryant sit there and purse their lips together and squint, trying not to laugh at Kate McKinnon because they knew how funny she was.
Absolutely.
And still continues to be.
Similar concept, different execution.
My angel said, I'm Keith, hold on. And then he violently yanked my soul up out of my body by the waistband of my sweatpants.
And did you also feel a loving energy?
No. What I mostly felt was the pinching of an epic lady wedge. Because I was being freaking airlifted by the crotch of my sweatpants, and it was jacked up into my cuckoo.
Absolutely. And I don't know that if we're not talking recurring characters, I could talk a single favorite one-off sketch. I mean, even the Career Day sketch that I keep referring to, because it is one of my favorite sketches.
Top five sketches of all time.
Yeah, very easily. And I'm not alone in that. That's not just my personal thing. I mean, I've been watching like lists of, you know, the top 10 or 20 lists of this, that, and the other, all over the internet, as we do, and that sketch has frequently, like, top five, if not top three, if not, that was named, like, the funniest sketch of all time on several. But even that, there have been other iterations of Career Day where that's a thing where it's not necessarily recurring, like, we do one with a specific character every week, but it's a format for
that
a sketch that pops
setting.
Up every once in a while. So, you know, even because of that, we're like, we're going to go back and revisit this gag that we did a certain way in like 1978, but we're going to do it on the 2021 season. At this point, it's so hard to pick a single one-off sketch that's the funniest, just because so few of them at this juncture are truly one-off.
Yeah.
You know?
I hear you.
But my favorite cold open of all time, if we're going serious note, Kate McKinnon singing Hallelujah made me cry, but...
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing Hallelujah. Hallelujah, Hallelujah, Hallelujah.
Easily my favorite cold open of all time was Matt Damon as Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
I'm a keg is half full kind of guy.
Matt Damon as Brett Kavanaugh broke me and everyone I know, as well as the internet, with that. And
that
if you
good.
Have not seen it, go watch it.
And that
do
to
it.
Me, to put a button on that, that to me is like, oh, SNL used to be funny. It's funny that you and I have been watching SNL our entire lives, and some of our favorite moments have come in the last 5 or 10 years. The show just keeps getting better. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the... Just talking about that topic is something that I could do a whole hour on, mm-hmm. too. But to try to truncate it as much as humanly possible, that's why I don't agree with these people. Like, I get the idea that, you know, when you came to the show is when you fell in love with it. The one cast you're always going to love is your cast. And that's, like, a common theme for a show that's been on this long, the way that it has.
Right.
But the thing is, you know... There are people, and I kind of get why, if you look at every cast, whether that was the cast that somebody came in on because of their generation or just where they started watching or whatever the reason is, I can get why everybody would get behind each one of these casts. You know, there are people who are absolute purists with things, and the original people who started it off are the only ones that they want.
The original, not ready for primetime players.
Yes, and I get why people would be very, 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 very ride or die for the OG cast members. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, having had almost 50 years now of that to build off of, and that this has become a place that can afford to get the best, the brightest, the most amazing and hilarious writers and performers because of the legendary nature that they have grown, the
every
legendary
summer.
Status they've grown to.
Every summer, during the hiatus, Lauren goes to, he goes to Second City, he goes to the Groundlings, he goes to Improv Olympics, he goes to what's the other one? Upright Citizens, and he mm-hmm. scouts people, and his track record for spotting talent is just about unparalleled in entertainment.
Oh yeah, he's everybody there. I mean, not everybody who has come through SNL has made it huge, but I kind of feel like anybody who has come through SNL at least had the potential to at one point in time.
Yes.
You know, but having all of that other stuff to build off of, I don't understand personally how anybody can say that these more recent, especially. You know, this current mostly leaving cast is not fantastic and that the show isn't funny anymore, because not only are they great in their own right, but they have so much of past SNL to build on.
Mm-hmm. The longer they go, the more they have.
It couldn't possibly fail at this point.
Yep.
You know, it couldn't possibly be bad because of everything that's already happened to build off of.
Right. Right. Well, on that note, we want to ask you guys out there listening, who is your favorite SNL cast member? What is your favorite sketch? Key in, clue us in, and let us know how you feel about Saturday Night Live as an entity, as an organization, as an influential piece of pop culture. History, really. 48 years is history, for God's sakes. Let us know what you think. You can hit us up on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/fuelyourfandom. You can always find us on email. You can email us at fuelyourfandom@gmail.com.
FYFTalaBooking@gmail.com is the backup address. You can also find us on Instagram at Fuel Your Fandom. You can find us on Twitter at @fuel_your. We're always taking donations for the Fuel the Future program that gets comics into the hands of underprivileged kids. You can find us on Cash App, Venmo, and PayPal at Fuel Your Fandom. And of course, we're always available wherever fine podcasts are bought, sold, traded, and stolen, on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Audible. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us, and we're super happy that you do, and that you cram us into your moist, tight, tender little ear holes week after week.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And I want to give a shout-out to our guest, Steph. Thank you for joining us this week. This is why we started the podcast. This is, the effusive, gushing love of something like that. That's exactly why that this podcast was started in the first place. It's just to watch people just absolutely glaze over and nerd out and just lose their shit. And, I mean, and that's...
Full frontal nerdery.
Full frontal, that's right. And so I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your fandom with us. Absolutely.
You
and,
guys are very welcome. Thank you. Anytime.
Well, from Jim and I want to thank you all for listening to another episode of the Fuel Your Fandom podcast. And please do remember, everything is fandom, and fandom is everything. Take care. I can't do it if you're watching.
Tough.
I can only do it if you're watching.